The Athletic.
On Monday, the Premier League went to war with its serial champions Manchester City, charging them with over 100 alleged breaches of its financial rules. It marked the end of a four-year investigation. But what is Rule W51? And could City suffer a points deduction this season or even be stripped of past titles? I'm Mark Chapman and welcome to the Athletic Football Podcast.
I believe them. Because I said to them, if you lie to me, the day after I'm here, I will be out and you will not be my friend anymore.
So with us for this one, our Manchester City correspondent Sam Lee and senior football news reporter Matt Slater. Let's start with the charges, Matt. Very simple. What have they charged with? How far back do the allegations go and why now?
Okay, well, look, there's lots of charges, over 100. And they kind of break down into sort of groups, really. The first group is all around Manchester City not providing accurate reports, financial accounts. So they haven't been honest and transparent with the league. And that goes all the way back to season 2009-10 up to 2017-18. And in each of those seasons, there are about five or six breaches, all related to the same thing, that you have not provided accurate financial information that gives a true and fair picture of the club's financial position. And that, of course, is all related to the, you have to go all the way back to the Spiegel and the Football League stuff and the inflated sponsorships and disguised costs. But it is all around you have not provided accurate accounts. And then we have another sort of set of charges that are around very specifically the Roberto Mancini allegations that he had kind of a little bit of a side hustle going on, a contract with a club in Al Jazeera, and some of his pay at Man City was being basically kind of topped up by this contract. And then the third group of charges is a bit technical. It's another thing that's in the Premier League handbook. You are not only just supposed to follow all our rules, you're supposed to follow the FA's rules, FIFA's rules, UEFA's rules, and by not providing fair and accurate accounts, you have therefore breached UEFA's licensing system that you need to follow to play in the Champions League.
On that one, sorry to interrupt there, but if people were listening to us last week in the Financial Fair Play podcast, we had quite a big discussion, didn't we, about how different organisations have different rules for different tournaments. And actually, some of UEFA's Financial Fair Play really only hits you if you qualify for the Champions League. So just on that point, is that quite unusual for one organisation to throw charges at someone based on other organisations' rules?
It would be if it wasn't in the handbook, but it is there very clearly in the handbook. Right. There's a little kind of paragraph that says, yeah, obviously you've got to follow all these rules and there's 300 odd pages of them. But you're also obliged to, you know, follow the rules of these other organizations that we kind of rate and value, like FIFA, UEFA, IFAB. And you did ask for a license to play in European club competitions in those years. And because we think that you weren't giving fair and accurate reports, you were in breach of that license. So we're going to hit you with some charges from our handbook. So that's what's happened there. It is a bit weird, I agree. The main stuff is really that first group of charges. Then just to finish the other groups, it's quite interesting that between 2015 and 2018, they are suggesting that Man City may well even have breached the Premier League's profitability and sustainability rules. So their FFP rules. I think they're probably, again, sort of technical stuff about not being fair and accurate. And then the last set of charges, which is about another sort of 30-odd charges, because it is five seasons worth, 2018 to now, to this current season, and there are sort of four or five breaches per season. It's non-cooperation. It's, we started investigating you in December 2018, and you have fought us every inch of the way and haven't cooperated with us, and we've been fighting with you in courts in secret and private, right, that we've not been party to, us lot. You're supposed to help us. You're supposed to sort of do what we ask you to do, and you haven't. So non-cooperation. So five main groups. I would argue that the first group is the key one, that you've not been honest, you've not provided fair and accurate accounts. And maybe that last one could be interesting as well.
Although on that last one, City are adamant. I mean, their statement, Sam, before we get on to all the other stuff, but just on the non-cooperation, City are adamant that they've cooperated every step of the way, aren't they?
Yeah, they are adamant that they've said that. I mean, there have been legal challenges throughout this process, this four-year investigation anyway. You know, City tried to argue the Premier League panel did not have jurisdiction to bring an investigation, and they suggested it was biased, as they did with UEFA a few years ago. And then that was thrown out, and they weren't allowed to appeal. They went and asked another judge if they could appeal. They got that right to appeal. It was thrown out. So there have been these steps already to kind of make life difficult. And within those hearings, you know, the Premier League were saying, you know, Manchester City have not cooperated. So, I mean, even down to this very basic principle of have you cooperated or not, there is disagreement. To some extent, the belief at City is they've been asked to hand over stuff that doesn't exist. This will only come out over the coming months and years, but clearly there's a difference of opinion as to what cooperation means. But again, if we go back to the UEFA timeline, City openly didn't cooperate. They said they never really cooperated because they said they didn't have any faith in the process. But when the time came to hand over everything to the Court of Arbitration for Sport, they were happy to do so. So it may well be a similar thing this time. But yeah, City have said that they have cooperated. The Premier League have been very insistent that they haven't.
Their overall feeling on this is one of confidence that they've done nothing wrong. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, hugely so. From the statement, and also from, you know, other things that you know, noises coming out of the club, shall we say, it's all very, we're looking forward to clearing our name, we've done nothing wrong, and all this kind of stuff. I mean, that could theoretically and hypothetically be put down to just a public front. You know, all kinds of companies in trouble would release statements saying everything's fine. And behind the scenes, you know, they're putting out fires and putting on parachutes and all sorts. But from what I hear, all this stuff that's coming out publicly is exactly how they feel privately. And not just what they're telling the players, because that could easily be seen as a public stance as well. Because obviously you're telling your players, look, everything's fine, we'll sort it out. But they genuinely believe that everything is going to be fine, as they did last time.
And what they're telling Guardiola as well, presumably.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, forget what they're telling the players. I mean, arguably Guardiola is the most important one to tell and explain.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's two things that's probably relevant. One is, I put this in my article this morning, kind of explaining everything that went on at City yesterday. But there's a feeling this is going to take for years anyway. So Guardiola might not even be there. He might have naturally reached the end of his time at City by the time this is resolved. That's one possibility. The other thing is that quote that he gave in May last year. He said, look, if they lie to me, I'll leave, basically. And people are using that again now to say, oh, well, he's going to have to leave then, isn't he? But what he'll be saying is, I trust them, and I've been right to trust them because they were right at Cass. He'll say again, I'm sure, and he'll believe again, I'm right to trust them now. And while everyone on the outside is, rightly or wrongly, I'm not even sure, thinking they're banked to rights and this is going to happen and looking forward to the punishments and the relegations, like City and obviously Guardiola will be thinking, well, we've been here before.
Manchester City are still alive here. Balotelli, Aguero!
As Sam says, there are a lot of people, you know, rival fans, basically, aren't there? Matt,
yes.
Dancing with joy about this.
And clubs.
Talking about, as Sam said, you know, trophies being taken back, points deductions, relegations, whatever. What are the potential punishments? Are they in the handbook what can be done if you break this rule?
Yeah, yeah, they sketch them out. But what they don't sketch out is kind of a sort of table, a kind of sliding scale, an absolute formula for this. They leave the punishments, so much discretion to this commission, this three-person commission that we know Michael Rosen is the chair. We don't know who the other two guys will be or two people will be. One will almost certainly be a financial expert because of the nature of this work. But they have incredible, incredible discretion. And the stuff.
What's Michael, just on the panel,
yeah,
and then we'll go back to, what's Michael Rosen's qualifications for this?
Oh, well, he's pretty qualified, to be fair to him. He is an eminent KC. He is a Court of Arbitration for Sport arbiter. He has done years and years of settling these disputes. range of sports, rugby, F1, table tennis, you name it, all, you know, the whole lot. A sports fan, you know, understands the landscape. Man City fans will have noticed he's an Arsenal fan. Also a member of MCC.
So it'll be him. Likely as you, it has to have some financial expert on this. And then the third person
eminent KC jurist, arbiter. Right. These will be really good people. Don't worry about the quality of these people. And there'll be some haggling over this as well, which is, again, because I imagine one of your questions is going to be how long. It's one of the questions I've been asked for the last 24 hours. There's going to be some haggling over this. Then there'll be some diary clashes. Both sets, Premier League and Man City, will have top people. So I've seen some sort of speculation that this could, in theory, happen relatively quickly. But how many times have you and I talked about EFL disciplinary panels? Derby's the one that kind of is freshest in my mind. And, you know, rouse about jurisdiction, rouse about that person. What does he know about it? And I've got a diary clash. I've got something else to do. And it just drags on and on and on and on. And we haven't even got to the bit, which I think is almost inevitable. There's going to be a disappointed party here. And the Premier League or Man City, unless it's a slam dunk either way, which doesn't, I don't sense is going to happen. Mm. There's going to be an appeal. And then another panel will be appointed to look at whether the first panel was right on points of law. Now, again, this is quite important because that's what happened in Derby. And that took another long, that added, I can't remember now, 6 months at least to the process. So I can see this not, I can see the first thing not happening until the summer. I think there's going to be lots of pushback for it not to happen immediately. Kind of people getting their positions absolutely nailed down. Sometime in the summer, and then who knows when the appeal will be. So I'd be thinking a year at least.
So, I mean, that's kind of refreshing. I think everybody, whatever outcome you're hoping for, or just an outcome at all, everybody probably wants it to be sooner rather than later. It's just, yeah, in that sense, it's nicer to hear, because there was definitely a sense at City where it's almost like it's not a subject, because obviously it is, but it's just kind of business as usual. And like I said, there is that kind of feeling that, you know, in terms of, are they going to carry on with transfers? Are they going to carry on with contracts? They may as well push on, because there's no real sign this is going to be done any time soon. And, you know, it could even be years plural is what I've heard. But obviously, Matt, to be fair, I'll probably trust Matt over myself most of the time, especially on things like this.
We're guessing, Sam. We are all guessing.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Everybody is. We don't even know who's on the panel, let alone what they're going to decide. Like, that's part of the fun.
Which means, just to go back to the punishment bit then, Matt, everybody's guessing.
Oh, look, the punishment's fascinating. I mean, of course, it's the most, you know, it's an exciting thing, isn't it? Exciting, sorry, scary thing, depending on how you sort of see these things. Because this is unprecedented for the Premier League. You know, if you're thinking about kind of comparable rows, you have to go a long way back to sort of Sheffield United and West Ham, which spilled over into the courts, which is chaos, which is one of the reasons why the Premier League is so desperate to stay out of the courts and keep everything on an arbitration basis. I've mentioned some of the big cases in the EFL derby was a long drawn out one, which again had a sort of FFP element to it and a kind of dishonesty element to it. Saracens is one that kind of people are sort of raising. I guess that is the closest example in British sport of the big name being caught cheating around a salary cap issue, and there being a significant punishment that was complicated. You know, they were initially docked points for breaching the salary cap, I think, over two or three seasons. I think it was three seasons. There was a points deduction. The man, the eminent jurist who was in charge, Lord Dyson, I think his ruling was quite subtle in that he didn't think Saracens cheated intentionally. You know, they were sailing very close to the wind, and he kind of believed that what they thought they were doing, they thought was okay. It was, you know, every loophole available. But then there was almost like a sort of second element to it where they were still in breach and they almost, I think, chose relegation. I think there was a sort of second punishment, which they accepted, which was a big points deduction initially. They might have survived that. Oh, no, we're still in breach. Let's just take the relegation. And of course, they bounced back and they barely missed a beat. Another one, of course, is Juve. Different, not FFP. It was match fixing allegations. Oh, huge scandal in Italy. I think it was 2004, 5, 6. Juve lost a Serie A title. It wasn't reallocated, but then they lost That was 2004-05. I think 5-6, they did lose because they were then relegated to Serie B, and Inter Milan got that year. But then that prompted years of fighting, and it kind of spread to other clubs, and there was a whole sort of second half of that scandal. Juve is still furious about it. You know, and then I'm thinking about doping and reallocated medals and Lance Armstrong's Tour de France. We've got loads to talk about and speculate about. And because that commission, that panel, has amazing amounts of discretion, but it all hinges on the if, right? If they say that Man City are guilty of all of that unbelievably long list of breaches, yeah, we could be looking at something quite significant, and we could be looking at retrospective punishments. If they think, no, that's fine. That's fine. They've sorted that one. And yeah, you know, that's in the margins of that one. And we end up with just non-cooperation. You know, could be a fine, could be a transfer ban, or something, you know, something suspended, all sorts.
In the next part, we'll talk about the timing of this. Why now? How far back they have gone? And also the reaction of some other European leagues to the news that came out on Monday.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Still going back towards the City goal, and Rodri has lost it, and Spurs are onto it, and they're into the penalty area, and can you believe it? The first time into the penalty area, Harry Kane scores for Spurs. Well, that is just typical of the way things have gone for City at this stadium. They've dominated.
Is there a surprise, Sam, just on the timing of this? Is there a surprise about how far back they've gone? About how long the investigation took, a 4-year investigation, and also why now? Why they've decided to announce it now?
Yeah, well, this is one of those things that, you know, people would, if they've been following this, people would have seen this maybe crop up in several different newspapers. You know, there's this City view that they think that the Premier League have rushed this out to coincide with the government's white paper, to as almost to say, look, we don't need a regulator, we can do this ourselves. That's kind of the City view. And again, what I was saying earlier, that isn't just a distraction technique they've thrown out in public. That is, you know, what they genuinely believe at the top of the club. So in terms of the timing, they believe, whether they're right or not, who knows, but they believe that to be the case. You know, they didn't. They probably expected some charges at some point, or they at least considered it was possible. But whether it was going to be yesterday morning or not, they had no idea. You know, after the Spurs game at the weekend, some guys down in the mix zone saw the chairman, Khaldun Al-Mubarak, and the CEO, Ferran Soriano, go into the dressing room after the game for 45 minutes for the chairman and 30 minutes for the CEO. And I remember coming away thinking, why would the CEO be in there anyway? Like, he's not a motivator. He's not a football man. He's the money man. And then this breaks on Monday morning and you think, okay, they were obviously telling the players. But they didn't know. They didn't actually know. It was Monday morning. The timing of it did come out of the blue. In terms of the surprise going back all that way, I don't know what they feel. That wasn't something I've asked. It wasn't something that came up. However, I suppose if you're going to take 4 years, you may as well look at everything. Do they have enough evidence to bring these charges and they know it's going to be a slam dunk? Or do they not have enough because there's not enough cooperation? So they've gone with what they think and they'll see what sticks, because there was an element of that to UEFA's. UEFA couldn't know what they had, so they just had to go with it and say, we're banning you for the Champions League and see what happens. And in the end, it didn't work. So again, we need to know, and we'll find out if the Premier League have got loads of proof or if they've just got a bit of suspicion and they don't really know.
Going back to 2009, I think there's a very simple explanation. And we have to go back to those hacked emails, because that's how far back they went. And Sam is right in that a large part of the UEFA case was time barred. They had a 5-year statute of limitations. Some of those early emails were around the Etisalat deal, the first Etihad deal. But the Premier League doesn't have statute of limitations in their handbook around this stuff. This is going to come up. I've already seen various sort of people talk about this on social media as though there is no statute of limitation issue at all here. There is, because This arbitration process is governed by just UK law, and ordinarily it's 6 years. However, and I think this is important to listen, because I think this is what the whole case will hinge on. A defendant cannot rely and lean on stuff being time barred, statute of limitation, cannot sort of gain the benefit of that by concealment and dishonesty. You cannot like play the system. So if there is a history, if there is a record of concealment and delaying tactics, the statute of limitations doesn't really come into it. Now, that's interesting, because I think there's a really key sort of philosophical difference between the UEFA process and this process, which we're entering into. The UEFA process was very specifically around FFP. So the hacked email said Man City inflated their revenues and hid their costs. Right, there was an honesty element to that, but UEFA had an issue, like a genuine issue. Well, you may well have breached FFP then. But don't forget, they'd already been through that process with Man City in 2014-15 anyway. So it was almost like a sort of replay of that earlier process. And it was like, well, no, hold on a minute. You really did breach FFP. Your losses were too big. So it's a very specific issue. This is different. The Premier League is a member-based thing. That Man City is a shareholder. This is the group saying to one of its members, you've lied to us. This is about honesty.
Interestingly, again, just in terms of the club's point of view, and people might listen to this and just think, just the kind of bravado almost is incredible. The thing about the time-barred stuff is, yes, some of that stuff couldn't be examined by UEFA. It was just, it couldn't be looked at. But there was other stuff that wasn't, and City overturned it anyway. But City are now saying, we welcome that the Premier League doesn't have any time-barred stuff, because our rivals are saying we got off on a technicality. So if we overturn this now, they've got no excuses. You know, it's this kind of complete opposite mind frame to how the wider world, all of us, we're all talking about relegation and titles being stripped, and they're like, oh, you know what would be good, actually? We can go and prove that we've done nothing wrong, and nobody can say we got off on a technicality. Like, you can think what you want about that, but that is the stance. These are the noises coming out. And again, it just adds another layer, because if that is right, then what would the fallout be if City are found not guilty?
One of the other things you mentioned earlier was that there's a feeling within the club that it's biased. You said that, didn't you, earlier?
Well, that was part of the challenge they did initially. They kind of disputed that the Premier League should even be looking into it. And when it went to a commercial court, they also said that the process was biased, but the judge decided, any fair-minded person would look at it and say, this isn't a biased process whatsoever. So this is already something that's been in the courts.
Okay, which was going to lead me on to my question to you, Matt, which is, how is something like this instigated? Because you mentioned it's a member organisation. Mm-hmm. Manchester City are one of 20 members. So hypothetically, let's say it's not City, right? Let's say they sit round a table, or they then, you know, go off into little groups and have a coffee after a Premier League meeting. I think, whoa, I'm not sure about the power of Club X. Should we instigate an investigation?
Yes. Well, I think I know what you're getting at, Mark.
I am not. I think the machinations of, look, it's one thing for UEFA to charge a club who have to qualify.
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yep, yep.
I think the machinations of when it's a member organization, a member-led organization, and one member is charged, I think that does call into question dynamics, particularly within the football world. And I think a lot of fans of a lot of clubs would be interested as to how that would work.
All right. So I'm happy to play along with this. You know, is it all Man United and Liverpool and Arsenal and Spurs and all that lot's fault, right? Have they been poking the Premier League to do this? Yeah, probably. But what was the Premier League supposed to do? November 2018, Der Spiegel splashed across a week the most amazing allegations about the most successful English football team of the last decade. Amazing allegations. UEFA had to act. You know, Man City could have won the Champions League that year. They could have won the Champions League every year since. They had to act. They'd already been, as I said, round the houses with Man City on this. This has been a what is it now? 15-year story. The Premier League had to act as well. They had to launch an investigation as well. You can't have your best team or one of your best teams apparently making a laughing stock of your rule book. So the investigation started, regardless of what Man United, Liverpool, and all the rest of them might have been whispering in the Premier League's ear. Now, could, and I think this is interesting, and this will be one for the conspiracy theories to run wild with, could the Premier League have dropped this? Could the Premier League at some point have said, do you see what happened to UEFA at CAS? That was a little bit humiliating. Have you seen how hard we've tried? This trench warfare we've been having with Man City over the last 2.5 years about our rulebook. We talked about the Rosen situation. That was a change the Premier League made. We have to sort of sort out this judicial panel. We have to have a kind of proper commission. And, you know, we have to have a process for when we have to go to war with one of our clubs. So they tightened that up. And this whole row about should arbitration processes be in public or private, this has been going on for ages. The Premier League have spent a considerable amount of money on this. I think once you've gone down that road, started that road, you've got to see it through. Now, I think there's a counter narrative, but there's sort of, I think, an interesting kind of side narrative to this as to how this is all being viewed. And again, it leads into that fan-led review issue, but also just sort of where the Premier League is right now in terms of its peer group leagues. Is this incredibly embarrassing and vindicates the sort of things that Tebas has been saying for a while? Or is it B, the Premier League sending out this great big signal to the world, we take financial impropriety seriously. We will go after our biggest, most powerful people. So yes, you can invest here. Yes, you can trust us. We are serious. We have a rule book. We stand by it.
Yeah, and that was actually going to be my sort of final subject here. I mean, it's no surprise, is it, that La Liga president Javier Tebas weighed straight in, Sam. At 2017 Soccer X Manchester, we complained about Manchester City and Paris Saint-Germain's financial fair play breaches. It's incredible that the Premier League have taken years to realise. We say now that there are more cases. Will it take so many years this time? We've touched on what happened with Serie A and Juventus are being punished again at the moment by Serie A at the time of recording this. The other leagues will weigh in here now, because this isn't actually just a domestic situation, bearing in mind how much other leagues are wary, but actually hate the Premier League's dominance.
Well, I mean, you kind of wonder if, however this pans out, whether City are found guilty or not, like, is this the spark for another run at a Super League or similar? In terms of Tebas, it's obviously no surprise. It's a drum he's been banging for a long time. I mean, at least he's consistent. I think we did a podcast on City last week, and Barcelona came up briefly. I mean, in fairness, he's kind of imposing very strict financial rules in La Liga, which almost make the clubs non-competitive in Europe. They're so strict and so harsh to abide by it. And it almost makes you wonder. I mean, obviously, they're doing it to make them sustainable. But I think at the expense of competing in Europe or putting them at a disadvantage to leagues where you can spend whatever you want, or seemingly, why are you doing it? But he's certainly consistent in that message. I mean, there's, you know, there's several aspects of his role, his title, his character that aren't so good. And, you know, there's plenty of things that you don't listen to him on. You know, I'm sure in a few years, once it's blown over, that everyone will be trying again to do something about regulating spending, curtailing the Premier League, making a closed shop. I'm sure there'll be some kind of push again in the future, and this might be the excuse, whatever the outcome.
That Premier League image, Matt, is a fascinating discussion point, particularly as, you know, when we record this and you're always on Zoom, you have various Tour de France posters behind you. And when I can remember doing a Lance Armstrong documentary, and one of the big things there is, well, is cycling forever going to be associated with being tainted, or is there an element of, well, at least cycling does it? The cycling's not alone. Pick, and you could then name 4 or 5 other sports. It's going to be going on there, but cycling make it public and are doing their very best. You could have the same argument here, yep, couldn't you?
Well, I think both those things are true about cycling, aren't they? So we'll just very briefly talk about that. So yes, in the minds of many general sports fans, cycling is a sport where doping is rife, right? And I'm sorry to break this to you, between the 80s, 90s, and noughties, it was. It was a sport that lost its moral compass. It was a sport where the drugs clearly worked, and if you weren't on them, you'd lose. Now, it's also true that having got itself into that terrible position, it then became much stronger and much more willing to take on its big beasts and test properly and properly funded testing regimes. And yeah, and has come a long way, which involved embarrassing itself, which involved washing its dirty linen in public. Athletics, I think, has gone through a similar process. So both those things can be true at the same time. Now, Tebas has made various remarks about state-owned clubs. So that, to go back to that SoccerX outburst statement, I was in the room. It was very funny, and it was really about Neymar leaving and going to PSG. And he's got away with words. And he remembers, he said, they are weeing in the swimming pool. They're peeing in the swimming pool. Right, and what are we supposed to say about this? And I think there are a great many people in football who do think it was a mistake to let states buy clubs, because you will inevitably run into issues that we have spent years discussing in Man City. How you separate related party sponsors, how you fairly benchmark their deals. It's really, really hard. And if you have a financial fair play system that is based on fair value for sponsorships, and yet you have a club that is owned, run effectively by a state, and you have their main sponsors also being state-run companies, that's tricky. You know, unintended consequences, that is just tricky. So he's been right about that. He's been right to say, what are we doing here?
How are City fans feeling, Sam? Finally, and as always, when I ask a question about fans, I realise it's a very broad generalisation.
I suppose defiant. It's the same as the club, really. Again, it's not the first time. You know, the club have been through this before. We've been through this before as reporters. But the club have been as well. And the way the football is in societies across the world, you know, the football clubs are the most important things in our lives. And the logical conclusion is, now we've got the internet and there's so much tribalism, we defend the club, whatever happens. So there's been an element of that. But I mean, even a different form of defiance. I've seen some fans say, oh, yeah, relegate us to the Championship and we'll come back and we'll do it all again, or relegate us to League One or whatever. You know, we'll have some good days out and all this kind of stuff. So, yeah, you know, let's let Khaldun al-Mubarak fight it. And it harks back to the kind of going to war with UEFA and let's do this to the Premier League and that kind of thing. I mean, obviously, there's others. There's people who are a bit more, let's just let it play out. But I think generally, as I suppose with any fan base online, there's a kind of defiance about the whole thing.
We will leave it there. Sam and Matt have their big explainer on the case right now on The Athletic. And you can subscribe today for just £1.99 a month for a year at theathletic.com/footballpod. Thank you to Sam and to Matt. We'll have another episode tomorrow. And if you follow us wherever you get your podcasts, you'll never miss a show. See you then.
The Athletic.